Okay, we're live. So what happened was my, I don't know if you can see, this is all like plasterboard. Do you call that plasterboard?
Yeah.
You know, like slabbing for, so this room is freezing. So we're, this wall, all the external walls are being like re-insulated. This is like pre-insulated plasterboard or whatever. So yes, I had to clear all the stuff out of here. I wasn't taking the rig apart, like fuck that. So then put the plasterboard over here today, and then I was talking to the guy that's doing it, and I don't know why I offered to do that. Like, I should have just said nothing, and I was like, oh, do you want me to take the floor tiles out around the perimeter because you're putting the plasterboard in? He was like, yeah, that'd be great. And then I was like, oh, why did I say that? Like, I could have just said nothing and then just be like, right, tough shit, you're getting paid to do it. And then my kids were in here earlier on because I had to move out like plates, bars, bikes, like all machines and stuff all had to go out. So there's just shit everywhere in my house. Like, every time you're around a corner, it's like, oh fuck, a salt bike. But my kids are in here and they were like fucking around with my Rodecaster and like turn up like all the sliders up and down, and I was like, oh, like, best luck figuring out what that is.
How are you kids?
4 and 2.
Okay. I've got the other direction. I got a 4 and an 8.
Wow, okay. It gets easier, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, I feel like one good input is that you know, at 4+ you start getting into father territory, and this might be wildly misogynistic, but I feel like pre-language, they're definitely more in the mother's court, just because they have a better, you know, kind of connection empathetic kind of just connection there. But once they have language, you can actually start doing things with them. You're like, oh wow, you're actually little people. This is great. Let's you know. So we have them out in the park every morning now, doing, you know, body weight workouts and,
oh cool,
and, like, all kind of nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah, we have all the machines are all around the house now, so they've both started, like, they're exposed to it like kind of regularly. But the issue in here is it's such a small space that, like, you can't, I'd love to train in here with them here, but unless I'm doing something like just burpees or just something, yeah, like, it's not possible. Like, if there's something moving, someone's just gonna get, like, I can imagine doing a kettlebell swing and my son just going flying out the window. But now the stuff is around the house, like, they were like rolling around the wall balls, and she was like she was on the bike erg, like standing but pedaling, and I was like, yeah, I've done that, I feel your pain. And then the two of them, it's funny, on the assault bike, when they sit up on the assault bike, they can grab one of the handles but not the second one. So then they're like, my son was like, want it, and I was like, okay, but when I bring that one to you, the other one's gonna go away. And he's like, want it? And then I give it to him, and the other one goes away. He's like, no, want it? It's like, right. I mean, that's just the general emotion that the assault bike brings out in people anyway. It's like, so
it's, yeah, it's gonna be painful. Devil's tricycle. My 8-year-old's got the dubious kind of win of being big enough to be able to use the assault bike now. And so he hops on there, and I think he's like, it's been a couple of weeks now, and I'm like, okay, you gotta do 30 or 40 calories, whatever. And I think he's just kind of cottoned on that, like, oh, this just sucks. Like, like, okay, I'm big enough to do it, but like, why?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, finally, I never want to do this again. Yes. I saw Rogue actually shared a thing today of it was like a woman on an Echo bike, and then there was a kid on a kid's version of the Echo bike, like, beside it. But it wasn't a Rogue branded thing, but they were like, oh, get your kids involved in your workouts, like, you know, family fun on the Echo bike. So I clicked, it was like a shop link. So I clicked it expecting the kid's version to pop up, because I'm a sucker for shit like that. But it like doesn't exist. It's not like their product. And all the comments are just, where can I get the kids one? Where can I get the kids one? And I said, whoever's in charge of like Rogue's Shopify is like, fuck's sake, no, you're supposed to look at the other thing. The other thing is what we're selling. Yeah, we have like the little barbell, you know, with the different colored plates on the side and stuff. And I got worried about my daughter. She was like 3, so about a year ago. And she was doing, I was trying to show her how to do a clean with the little barbell. And the plates are like, I don't know, like arbitrary nothing amount, like 0.005, whatever. And I put, like, I was like lifting, I was like, this is so light. So I put like the 3 of them on it just for aesthetics. And then she was like moving. I was like, oh, it's too heavy. And I was like, you pussy. Obviously, internally, externally, I was like, oh, let's just take off the outside ones and you can move it. Like, you know, I was like, as I was taking them off, I was like, I don't even think this is making it lighter. I think it's just changing the size. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be good. I think the plan is this is going to become like a playroom for the kids, because there's just shit everywhere all the time and we're sick of it. So we'd rather just be able to shut the door and be like, that doesn't exist anymore. And then I'm going to build like a garage out the back for this room to go in. So yeah, I agreed a price with a, what you'd call a contractor, what I'd call a builder, like 2 weeks ago. So if anyone wants to donate any memberships in the live chat, feel free, because it's not fucking cheap. So you're, I should introduce you really. So you're Forrest Smith, and you're wearing your brand on your chest there. So Kinnean, is that how you say it? Kinnean, yeah.
Yes, it is. It's okay. We actually branded it. It's the Greek for movement, or based on the Greek for movement. So,
oh, okay. I knew like kinetic. I knew there was some kind of link, but I thought you just made it up. like someone was saying, do you know that Hyrox is made up? Like it was just, they started off just spitballing words, and then they got as far as hybrid. And then one of the founders is like, what about like rocks or something? And like, so they literally just like mashed words together and they were like, yeah, that works. So I thought maybe yours was one of them. It was called something different originally, was it? Was it called like Revive or something? Or
it was called Revive Light. We spelled it a little bit differently, R-E-V-I-I-V. But we had, as we started the same month that we started shipping products, we get sued with a cease and desist. And so we had basically in 2 weeks to rebrand everything, and it was wow. It was hectic, but we really like the idea of getting people back into movement, and a lot of the folks we deal with have kind of osteoarthritis, or you know, are coming back from an injury, and so it's really kind of a recovery thing to them. And we just heard so many good stories about that we thought that movement was a good kind of foundation from a brand standpoint.
What did the other company do that offered the cease and desist? What was their like shtick?
Red light panels for skin. So if you want to have less wrinkles and look younger, then which is a thing, then this is the kind of things that you buy, the Revive.
And theirs was called Revive as well.
They spelled it in a different way, but yes, it was Revive. And, so they just said, hey, you know, it's going to be too close, cease and desist and sued us. And again, the when you're that young in the company journey, that it's just kind of like, okay, well, Let's move quickly and fix this in a way that's not going to require lawyers, because you know the at the end of the day, the only ones who win from that type of thing are the lawyers.
It's yeah, and actually seems like it was obviously shit that it happened, but it actually seems like a fair version. Like I've heard some shit versions of that story where it's like, oh, a cease and desist, like what did the other company do? Oh, they made bread, or you know, like something that's totally unrelated. And it's like, well, why did they sue? Like it's like you're gonna profit off confusion. And it's like, look, nobody's confusing your bike with this thing that we're making. Jake Chapman says, oh, my mother-in-law uses it. She got hers at the games. I assume he means the red light therapy that you offer and not the face mask thing that you were talking about.
I hope so. I think we had a team, including myself, at the games this past August, and it was great. We got to one of the things that's awesome about kind of building devices is you go do things that you feel like should be made and kind of close the gap between what technology can do and what it's actually doing right now. Yeah. The downside is you get stuck back in the lab a lot, and you know they lock us in the product tech team labs and don't let us out to see the normies. But we got to go into the CrossFit games last year with our team, and it was great. We got to really see, you know, we had a lot of people coming up and saying, hey, I've had this experience and helped me get back into training, you know, so much faster than I could otherwise. And we also got to have some interaction around how people were using the device and see, you know, it's one of those where it's not, in the 65 plus. Yes. That's
yeah. So Jake says she's in the 65 plus and swears by it. Again, not sure if he's talking about your device or the skin de-aging. No, I'm pretty sure he is. I saw a video of you did like a live Q&A or a Q&A on YouTube when you were rebranding. So that's how I knew that there was a different name. But like you're into CrossFit, like you've been into CrossFit for a while. Is that accurate?
It is. It is. You know, my level of competitiveness kind of goes up and down depending on how busy work is. But I really like it, and it's been one of the nice things, particularly as you travel, is being able to carry on and you not have to really modify your training so much. And if you're short on time, just drop into any box in the world, and you're going to get a good workout. So, like, you know, worst case, you're going to have to take a day off of your own programming and do somebody else's, which is also kind of fun.
You have an assault bike there behind you, and is this like an office?
It is. This is my my studio office. We've got kind of camera gear set up for, you know, shooting different things, and the assault
just
bike.
I know it's a design, like it's aesthetic, but you could easily make pegboards out of those panels.
Yes. Yeah. The only problem is that the ceiling is a little too low for that here, but no, we've been dragging in all kind of ideas. We've been loading up on, so the assault bikes here, I actually, for whatever reason, I can't remember what it was, but I have the Echo bike in my bedroom now, like set next to my bed, so that, like, I think it was
pre-gaming. Get the heart rate up.
Well, out of bed and do a 50 calorie sprint, and just make yourself even more miserable in the morning. But then we've been playing around with a bunch of different kind of tools. There's so much happening between technology and then also just kind of good training modalities. GoRuck's got a bunch of really cool kind of sandbag stuff they've been working on and upgrading, and so that's one of the ones we do with the kids as well. And so, you know, there's barbells, dumbbells, everything that's mother around here somewhere. I'm sure my neighbors don't love me, but, you know, what are you gonna do?
Are you upstairs or downstairs now?
Kind of in the middle. Up in the mountains of Mexico. So we're in central Mexico here in a city called Querétaro. And central Mexico is essentially these mountains just running north and south through Mexico. And so all the cities in central Mexico, the city is down in the valley part, but like the cooler kind of view for the city is just on the mountains looking into it. So we're up in the mountains looking into the city.
But you're not from Mexico?
No, I'm from Atlanta originally.
And how did you end up in Mexico?
Well, it's a bit of a story, but I normally live in China.
Fucking saw you're fluent in like Mandarin, which is like obviously not that rare because it's a fucking big population, but it's rare, I think, for someone that isn't currently in China to speak Chinese, no?
Yes, it is. It's been unfortunate. I don't have anybody to speak Chinese with here, so I've
well, been kind of you're in luck because I happened to. No, I'm joking. I'm not. Imagine I'm just broken in Chinese. Yeah. Subtitles. How long did you live in China for?
Almost 20 years, on and off. Whoa. I was kind of in and out for different things, but yeah, I ran my last couple of businesses there in Chinese, and it's a really good way to kind of learn technology, supply chain, and manufacturing for, you know, cool devices from the ground up. So I've built and run different kind of technology engineering and manufacturing groups out there for a long time now. It's seems it just keeps getting longer and longer. Every year I have to add another year onto it. It's like, oh my goodness, am I that old?
what age are you?
43.
So you moved to China when you were like 20-ish.
That's right.
And was it for like, was it, were you like, all right, okay, I want to like start a business, I'm going to go to China, or were you moving to China anyway and then sort of fell into that? Was it the purpose of it to start something?
Actually, it's one of the reasons. So I studied Chinese in school, and from high school up, and I chose Chinese. They had two kind of non-standard language programs in this international baccalaureate school that I was at, and one was Arabic. And if you did Arabic, then typically the kind of path out of that was into policy, diplomat type roles, or Chinese. And out of Chinese was into business. And so I liked the idea of business and the kind of commercial side of life a lot better than policy and diplomacy. And so I picked Chinese and then went to study there a little bit afterwards and then liked it. And so, moved back to try my hand at starting up my own business and see how it went. And it just kind of took off from there.
This is crazy. So what age were you started learning Chinese then?
14.
What's 14, it like 14. As a, like, is it, it's not intuitive, I don't think, is it?
So the pronunciation takes a bit because you have different tones, but once you get past the tones, speaking and understanding oral Chinese is not that bad. You can actually do it. There's no grammar. Like I would say, relative to things like I'm in Mexico now, and I speak significantly worse Spanish than I do Chinese. But it's because, like in Chinese, you can just smash a bunch of words in a sentence, and it all kind of makes sense. You don't have to worry about conjugating things. You just kind of meh, and it all works. Reading and writing Chinese, if you don't do it when you're young, don't do it. It's a pain in the ass. It is just like rote memorization, and it sucks. But speaking, yeah, speaking in oral, you can kind of pick up reasonably well.
And did you like when you were there in China and like walking into meetings, were you like freaking the fuck out of people by just breaking into fluent Chinese? They were like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. Or did you have like, were you walking into a meeting and people talking about you in Chinese in front of you, not thinking that you'd understand?
Actually, there's a couple of funny stories that came up because of that. One of the first, I had a fabric company, was my first company, and one of the vendors that I went to go see, they had an international sales director who was a woman, and she and the driver from the company came to pick me up, and they were both married to other people, but were having an affair together, and were just saying the wildest shit that you can imagine. And
You're like sitting in the back
after
going, no, I'm definitely don't know Chinese as well as I. She can't have just said that she's going to do what I think she's going to do.
and so I couldn't break out the Chinese for any of the rest of the visit because
Oh, shit.
I've already heard through this. I'm like, oh, that's going to be awkward. So I had to leave it until the very end. And just like as I was kind of leaving, like, hey guys, just next time I'm going to come with the Chinese. And they're like,
Oh my God. I wouldn't have been able, I just for a comedic effect, I would have been like, yeah, good job from the back seat or something. Oh, that's so funny. Fucking hell, that's amazing. That's so funny. Okay, so your first business over there was fabrics. And then so because I'm always interested, like when people describe themselves, so you're obviously accurate, because when people describe themselves as an entrepreneur, usually it just means that they've done like loads of, they just don't fuck all, but they don't actually have like a traditional job. But you actually seem to have like started a business, sold it on, moved on, started another one, etc. Is that like, were you always in, was that always your thing? Like, say, growing up, were you like selling shit out of your locker at school and stuff? Were you always like hustling, or was it like just you knew you knew, understood business well, and then like just started one when you were ready to start one kind of thing?
The first one I started, I ran. I think the funny thing about entrepreneurialism is you have to just go fuck up a lot to get better at it. And so there's not really kind of, you can take courses for it, but it's not, doesn't work. In my opinion, I think there's it's probably gotten better over the years. But the first business I ran, I built okay. We got reasonable revenue out of, and I ended up selling on. But it, when I ran it, I didn't know how to delegate or hire people or set up processes or anything like this. And so it was rough. The first few years I was doing, 300,000 miles a year of flying, just because I would go do all of my sales myself. I would do all the factory visits. I would do all of kind of everything myself because you just don't know any better. And so you slowly learn by, trying to remove some of the blockages that you have for growth, and also just trying to find some time in the day to sleep and not die from exhaustion. So yeah, it's one of those kind of ongoing things where it's still a learning process, having done it for a couple of decades now. But I think you can develop some pretty sound sets of heuristics relative to how you spend your time, and then trying to find the highest leverage pieces that you can. And then, one of the things I found that I didn't like was managing large groups. So, we make small heuristics of like hire ultra good people who are going to take on a lot versus five people to split those tasks out, and just makes it a little bit easier to interact with kind of higher functioning people, and it makes more energy in your day type thing. So the nice thing is you can steer it where you want it. The bad thing is there's not really a roadmap, so you kind of have to steer it at all times.
How many businesses have you run or have you started?
That I've actually exited four. But then a lot of small pieces where you go to test concepts and it doesn't work. And I think that is one of the things that I have learned, is that, you know, testing, as much as you think you know what you're doing, hypothesize and test everything, because, you know, oftentimes what you're considering a reasonable business may or may not be. And those kind of big heuristics setups help for you to avoid stepping in the biggest holes a lot of times. But yeah, there's a couple of ways for companies to succeed, but there's an infinite way of them for them to fail. So it's really kind of just go out and test first. So I would say probably having tested 12 to 15 different concepts as businesses that failed, and having four that actually won, you want to fail fast and get on to get on with ones that actually do work.
So the product or the idea or whatever that came from, you injured your knee, your MCL, is that right?
That's right. Grappling, tore my MCL, and it's one of those things that just flares up quite a lot. And my mother's always been into kind of ahead of the curve solutions, and often, more often than not, they're kind of snake oil. And so I get in her input, but you know, a lot of times she just hits things that really work. And so I was actually going to go do research to prove that this didn't work, that it was kind of snake oil. And I went in. And,
yeah,
and,
just so you could say to your mom, I told you so. started testing.
Yes. So I go start opening up the medical literature on it, and I'm like, okay. There's a couple of papers that say it could work, but yeah, let's see like the larger papers. And the amazing thing about it is that it's been around since, for 100+ years. People have been kind of measuring the effect of light on the body. Where it's really started kind of getting more steam, though, is when you start having red lasers. And that was, I think, the mid-50s or so. And then as soon as you have red lasers, somebody's testing the kind of impact on physiology. You just didn't have the ability to kind of use red or infrared lasers to be able to test that before, and seeing reasonable results. And what's really happened over the last 5 to 10 years is, right now we have a database that actually a friend of ours in Finland put together, that's, I think, around 7,000 papers that have been cataloged and then recorded for the type of light, the characteristics for the different light, what pathology they're trying to treat, and what the outcomes are. And the research in the space has just really boomed. There's been, because there's more reasonably priced emitters. So the lasers and the LEDs have gotten more reasonably priced and smaller. You can kind of minimize the size of these devices. And that's really what the lasers has only happened. There's a type of laser that we use that's it's called a vertical cavity surface emission laser. But they're less expensive and they're smaller. And that allowed us to build something that you could actually wear versus having to go to a clinic for. And that's one of those things where, our idea for it was, if we reduce the friction points for this device, make it wearable, and make it battery driven and make it easy to use and something that someone can, and make it cheap enough for somebody to be able to afford to use at home, then people will replace their pharmaceuticals that they're taking right now, whether it's opiates or NSAIDs from a pain standpoint. They can go through and really delete out a lot of these negative impacts on their physiology, because the opiates, I think, is it's fairly widely known now because the crisis that we've had over the past decades. But with NSAIDs, we find ourselves talking to people about this quite a lot, and they have a massive negative effect on stiffening effect on cardiovascular tissue. So they increase the rate of severe cardiovascular disease. They put you at risk for your stomach. They have a negative impact on the liver. But there's a lot of people out there who, I just want to go back to training. Let's take my ibuprofen today. And, that's after you do that for a couple of years, you have this chronic use that really drives, the craziest part of it to me, though, is that it actually degrades the tissue where you have the pain. So when you have osteoarthritis or a torn meniscus like I have, they've actually measured the fact that this is causing that soft tissue to break down. faster and to rebuild and recover more slowly. And so it puts that kind of homeostasis out of balance, and you start degrading your soft tissue, like your cartilage and your ligaments.
Yeah, like it's weird. Like I always have, I don't know, I'm always reluctant to take, like I don't know a lot about anything, but I'm always reluctant to take, like if I have a sore throat, I always wait until like, all right, this is fucking unbearable, like before I take something. I try not, I don't know, like maybe it's stupid, like maybe it doesn't make any sense, but I'm always like, like what if this is doing something else? They're like affecting something else and I don't know what it's affecting or whatever, because my entire life is like, has always been, and like I'm the same with my kids have a fever, I give them Calpol. I don't know what the brand you guys have is, basically paracetamol, and then if they're like really sick, I give them like ibuprofen and in like liquid. And I started the same way, so now I'm just like, oh, I'm sick. It's just like, you know, so now I'm trying to like not do that. But like, so just explain, I just don't understand like basically anything about the product. So I've seen, so like infrared sauna, that's different from this. Infrared sauna is like heat, right?
That's right. So what the products we make are they're called a number of different terms. You know, one of the more popular ones is red light therapy, but it's not completely accurate because we're also using infrared light to be able to trigger different signaling in the body.
Okay. So you know those like things, it's like a cubicle of like floor to ceiling red lights, and that's like you like walk in, you stand there, and that's your whole body, but that's not infrared, it's just red lights.
Typically right? they have, yeah, those with infrared and red, but those, it's very hard. One of the things that we've found over this, as I was saying, with the medical kind of research expanding in this, is that light and photons are very much dose dependent, just like drugs are. And so you have different photoacceptors that interact with different wavelengths of light, different colors of light, at different depths of tissue. And so, you know, as an example, one of the things that we interact with quite a lot with our infrared light is hemoglobin. So hemoglobin's in your blood. It carries oxygen. It also carries nitric oxide. And so one of the things that we're doing with our infrared light is our 808 nanometer infrared light is cleaving the bond between nitric oxide and hemoglobin. And what that does is that binding site for nitric oxide and hemoglobin is competitive for oxygen. So it allows that hemoglobin to take up more oxygen, but it also puts that nitric oxide into the bloodstream. And when you have nitric oxide in the bloodstream, it dilates your blood vessels. So it brings more blood to the area, and it allows the hemoglobin to add more oxygen to that area that you're delivering more blood to. So there's a couple of things like this where we interact in some very direct and known ways with different molecules in the body. And again, blood is one of them. There's another one called in your mitochondria called cytochrome C oxidase. That's actually a bottleneck for energy production. So your mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. And you can increase, in what we could call kind of the cell wall, but because it's not a cell, we call it a phospholipid bilayer, but in the walls of the mitochondria, you have a chain of things that happens to produce more energy. And again, these there's four steps in this chain, and the third and fourth typically are the bottlenecks. And that's where that cytochrome C oxidase lives, is in that space. And we interact with that as well and allow your body to remove these bottlenecks from the mitochondrial ATP production, which gives your cell more energy, but also downstream has really kind of a balancing effect on oxidative stress. And they've got some really good literature on this, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years. Oxidative stress is really one of the key drivers of so many pathologies and diseases. And when you can balance that and reduce, if you have too much oxidative stress, you age, for example, very quickly. If you don't have enough, you can actually, there's a number of different things that happen if you don't have enough. Actually, it's almost even worse to have too little oxidative stress. But all of these pathologies will present downstream from a metabolic standpoint. And depending on where they're happening in your body, for example, in your brain, depression, chronic anxiety, bipolar, different types of dementia are all tied to this metabolic impairment or function in your mitochondria. So there's really big impacts from a health standpoint with what you can treat. Or if you want to think about it from an athlete standpoint,
I know you're kind of mid-flow there, but like that stuff that you're saying. So, okay, first of all, Corey kind of nailed it here. So you could have just said it's science, bitch, and I would have accepted it. You definitely made up a couple of words in the middle there. No, but what you're describing there, is the negative side effects that you're talking about there with the like bipolar and the like Alzheimer's and all that kind of stuff, is that inflammation based, all that stuff that you're talking about then? Are those bottlenecks caused by inflammation?
So what we're seeing right now is that it's a combination of inflammation, oxidative stress, and mitochondrial dysfunction. And what it starts with is that mitochondrial dysfunction, and you see the inflammation and this oxidative stress are triggered by the mitochondrial dysfunction. And so one of the things that we're actually working on right now, and that we're our product team have just finished filing some really cool grants with the Department of Defense for being able to sense in kind of special forces operators and Air Force pilots, is using lasers and sensors, we can now measure oxygenation in different parts of the brain, and that's a good proxy for how energy is delivered. And then we can also measure this cytochrome C oxidase in your mitochondria, which gives us a relative function or a relative understanding of the pace of use of production for energy, and whether or not you have energy impairment from a generation or a usage standpoint. And when you have that impairment in different regions of the brain, it presents in different ways. And that's where you see kind of these downstream effects of, you know, major depressive disorder, chronic anxiety, different types of dementia, et cetera. And those are just based on this impairment being located in different areas of the brain.
It's crazy. Yeah. Inflammation has a lot to answer for, really. So with this device then, so say like my sister-in-law ruptured her ACL there like 2 weeks ago on like day one of skiing. So if she did that and then was like put in a splint or whatever, brought to hospital in France, and they were asking her, did you hear the champagne pop? And she's like, yeah. They're like, yeah, you ruptured your ACL. So she comes home, she's put on, she gets an MRI, it's like, yep, it's gone. So she's put on like heat, ice, like alternating, like icing every 15 minutes, every hour or whatever. She goes physio, like all this kind of stuff. Like, can this be used then, like for that kind of inflammation as well?
100%. And we actually have some really interesting data around this as well. We work with some NFL players, and so one thing on the inflammation, I think you nailed it earlier. Inflammation has a lot to answer for, and it also doesn't stay local. So when you tear your ACL, just as a kind of a background on, since it's relevant to the injury kind of we're talking about, they had a big study that wasn't our study, but it was a very big and well-funded one for 3,500 NFL players. Mm. Those whom had an ACL tear were 50% more likely to have a heart attack in the coming decades. And this is after they wash it out for, they've recovered these, they're not having, their training change. They're like, once they wash out all these conflicting factors, 50% increase in severe heart attack. And one of the things that we've kind of chased that back through with our work is when you have an ACL tear, one of the things that happens is, with traumatic tissue damage, whether it's surgery or kind of sports related, that tissue is going to be more likely to increase the amount of inflammation that it puts out over the coming years, and that can trickle on to decades. What happens with that, though, is it doesn't stay local. So what you see is you see local inflammation maybe being pain and swelling and a number of different ways it can present. What you'll see regionally is you can put an infrared camera on these guys who've torn their ACL, or girls, and you see the quad above that torn ACL has impaired blood delivery. And how that presents is with that infrared camera, you can see that it's about 1.5 to 2 degrees colder than the healthy one. And so what's happened is that that inflammation, again, doesn't stay local. It's trickled out, and it's impaired the cardiovascular tissue in that quad. And then again, what we've kind of chased it down to now is it's not just local and regional. It's kind of general cardiovascular impairment based on local injuries. So tear your ACL, you're now seeing that you're going to have a much stiffer. They use a couple of measures for stiffness and kind of strength and robustness of cardiovascular tissue. And so they call it, the big one they use for this is called shear strength. And you see the shear strength where there's blood going through it, and so it's putting pressure on the walls externally. When it's pushing against it perpendicularly, that's the shear. And the shear strength that your cardiovascular tissue can resist goes down massively. Just and that's system wide based on just that ACL traumatic damage. And so I think it all comes back to that same inflammation piece that you mentioned, is that, you know, it may be local tissue damage. You may think that you're just treating something like this to kind of just get away from the pain and inflammation, but there's actually a larger systemic impact of getting into a good recovery program.
So if she was to get this then and use it, so she did her, I'm going to get this wrong. If you tear something, it repairs. If you rupture it, you need surgery. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So she tore her MCL and she ruptured her ACL. So she has to wait for her MCL to heal before she can get surgery on her ACL. So she's like, it's like mid-March or something when she can get her ACL done, I think. So we'll use her as like patient like X for this, for the Kinion device. Like, what uses does it have for someone like her, someone in her position?
You can use it immediately on both of those. The one that needs surgery, the ACL is not going to repair itself. But the preparation that you have for that, by helping to recover this MCL, is going to be massive. The type of tissue that you develop, and then, so we've got really good microscopy these days where you can see how scar tissue looks like very clearly. So the type of collagen that you use for the scars, and then how the collagen aligns and kind of the flexibility and durability of the scar tissue is way better if you're able to use particularly the 808 nanometer piece. You generate more type 2 collagen. You generate more chondroblasts, which are kind of the fast growing soft tissue generator. So chondroblasts are like these little cells. You generate more of them, and it's a very slow process. So it's not something where you really see this kind of like growing in a petri dish, but within the knee, you would have at the edge, at the live edge of your, whether it's ligaments or cartilage, you have these cells called chondroblasts, and they, as they generate, they start to put out outside of them this fibrous material that's made out of collagen called extracellular matrix, which is essentially the body of what your cartilage and your ligaments are. The more and the healthier of these chondroblasts that you have, the faster and the healthier your soft tissue growth is. And that's what we increase with laser therapy is, by reducing the inflammation, the chondroblasts don't die off as fast, and B, they generate faster. So the growth rates for chondroblasts in the area increase. And when they also produce more extracellular matrix because they produce type 2 collagen faster.
You're crazy fucking smart. So she uses this pre-surgery, gets everything set up, it expedites her recovery, I guess, or assists it and makes it a little bit smoother and faster and stuff, and more idyllic, I suppose, for the cells and stuff. And then gets the surgery, and then I'm assuming it will help with that as well, with post-surgery recovery, and then even just lifelong, like, getting rid of stiffness, inflammation, or, you know, whatever kind of bad shit is in her knee. It just helps clear it out and keep it fresh, kind of.
It does. It reduces that inflammation. And I would say the one other thing she would like to do as well is treat the quad above it, because, again, it doesn't take very long for that quad to have the blood delivery impaired in the capillary networks. And being able to treat those and have better blood delivery into the region is a big help to keep it from trickling out and becoming a systemic issue from the cardiovascular tissue standpoint. So one of the things that we've seen with that is faster recoveries. And then also with this blood delivery, if you're treating that quad, you know, again, this is something where those NFL players, we're testing them 10 years after they've had this injury and surgery, and that quad is still 1.5 to 2 degrees colder. But if you teach it, if you can use a laser therapy on it, you can essentially teach it how to increase nitric oxide, endothelial nitric oxide synthase. And that's a powerful creator of nitric oxide to be able to open those capillaries up and deliver more blood. And so it takes about 4 or 5 weeks. I think it's taken up to 7. But you see those like side-by-side scans with the legs, and the differential just goes away over 5, 6, 7 weeks.
And what is it, just like, do you put it on for an hour a day, or like, how do you, is there a different, if you're like using it on your ankle, is that different from using it on your knee or your wrist? Is it different? Does it depend on what joint it is, how long you do it for, how regularly you do it?
Typically you get a little bit faster results out of larger joints, but just because there's more tissue for us to interact with the smaller joints, like ankles, ankle edema for some reason clears up very quickly. But if you have, for example, Achilles tendonitis or plantar fasciitis, you can actually treat for a little bit longer. So with that said, we recommend 15 minutes at least once a day. If you can do 15 minutes in the morning and evening, you're going to get better results. It's not going to double the outcomes, but you're going to get better results, and it'll move you through that recovery faster. And again, if it's smaller areas, like you know, one of the ones where we get a lot of our older users is hand osteoarthritis or foot osteoarthritis. That takes longer, again, just because. And so you can do 20 minutes a day, twice a day on each of those, because again, we just don't have as much tissue to interact with. Yeah. But it's also going to take a little bit longer. Those are going to be, you know, for knee problems and hip problems, we see pretty solid results within the first 3 weeks of pain, inflammation reduction, meaningful double digit kind of, you know, call it, you know, 40 to 60%, depending on the individual, from an inflammation marker reduction in those joints, where it takes about double that time with the smaller joints.
And like how do you compare, because say even I'm thinking, like, my dad has, like, his hands are fucked, like, just from years of being a farmer and being out in the cold and shit, but he has like, his two hands are different from each other, so like one is worse than the other. Do you know what I mean? So like, yeah. It's not as simple as saying, like, oh, let's do it on their right knee but not their left knee, and let's see what happens, compare, because the two knees can be different. But then you also can't compare, like, me to you, because if I've had a different life, different diet, different sport, different upbringing, whatever, different biology, different DNA, we're going to be different anyway. So how do you know, or how can you, like, clinically prove, like, what kind of tests do you have to do, or what kind of, like, you know, parameters you have to put in place to say, okay, this is accurate, that we're, even though we're comparing a different group of different people, we know it's accurate because of whatever.
You have to do larger studies and then kind of remove a bit of it. There's and I know my statistics okay, but not fantastic, but there are kind of statistical significance points there where you can say, okay, this didn't work as well for these guys, but we're still kind of above a you know, 20% change. One of the things that's been very difficult for us is that the metrics and the measurements. So our mission as a company is to increase the quality of life for the largest number of people we can in the most measurable way we can. And we really feel like, you know, there's my partner and I, that's how we met, is around kind of wanting to start the business in a way that's not necessarily commercially based for exit, but really just something that we can kind of keep at longer term and really get into and put ourselves into from an ongoing standpoint. And that's how we chose that as a mission. But one of the things that's been very frustrating for us with the Move Plus is that it's a neuromuscular pain and inflammation device. Inflammation, we can do blood draws. That's pretty cut and dry. And the numbers are very, very clear. with pain. I don't know if you've ever seen a pain scale, but it's a bunch of fucking smiley faces. Like, it's a frowny face on this side and it's a smiley face on that side. And you can kind of put the marker where you want in the middle. And so it's very frustrating for us when our core mission is to measure how we're able to impact for people. And then we have kind of, for lack of a better term, shitty subjective measurements to be able to do that. And so this is one of the reasons why we've been investing in this sensor technology, the spectroscopy side of the technology that we're developing right now, is to be able to measure more effectively what's happening in the physiology as we're able to kind of get people through these type of therapies. And it's a long-term goal of ours to be able to improve on that and make it something that's more meaningful than these subjective measurements.
Okay. So I'm kind of with Corey. So I'm not sure if I feel smarter or dumber. No, you are actually explaining it really well, like really well. It's crazy. It's the sort of thing, obviously there's advancements in technology and stuff, but it is the sort of thing that you're kind of like, how has this not been around? You know, like when you hear something that's like invented, you're like, why has nobody done this already? Or how is this first? Like,
it's crazy. I say that, like, we have our brain project that's ongoing, and like once a week, I just think, how is this down to us doing this? There's these great groups out there doing these kind of lab scale versions on huge desktops. And it's great to see the science advancing, but where this really makes a difference is in people's lives, or where it has an opportunity to make a difference is in people's lives. And there's just a gap between what's happening at the lab scale and what's happening in something wearable and affordable for people to use. And, you know, we're in that gap. There's a couple of other companies that we keep up with that are doing different things with technology in the space. But it's kind of crazy. I just had a conversation with a good friend of ours who's a founder at Knox. They make a muscle oxygenation and nitric oxide sensor, and they really cool technology. But one of the things that he was saying is that, you know, you see a number of these different technology areas where, you know, even if it gets developed, it kind of stagnates. And so one of the things that he noted for that was there's a number of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 VO2 max kind of measurement devices. There's a new company that's come along and developed a really interesting way of doing this for $500 though, that can actually go and change people's lives. And I feel like there's there's something of an analog for what we're trying to do with Kenyon as well.
Yeah. I think what made you guys stand out to me, because I'm so like close-minded and insular in what I'm doing and the environment that I surround myself with. So I saw like Sarah Sigmund's daughter is using it, Roman, Brooke Wells, this. Now, if Nick, in my opinion, if Nick says, this is really good, I sit up and listen, because it's like he doesn't just say things to say things, or he very rarely says anything, but if he comes out and says something is good, I pay attention, because that guy's a fucking genius. And the fact that he's coming out and saying it works is impressive. Ricky using it again, like he's had surgery, he's, you know, he puts his body through the ringer like constantly. The fact that he's using it, and I've seen him do some crazy shit. I wonder if I'd be able to find, I don't know, did you see his story? Was it yesterday? Oh my God. He put up a story of doing, it was with these guys. Was it with these guys? Oh, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Anyway, he was doing like physio, but he had like a ball with water in it and it was like swinging it on a resistance band and like all that, like crazy shit. That, like, I've never seen anyone do any of that shit before. So again, when I see people start doing stuff, I'm like, the fuck is that thing? And I've seen like Emily Rolfe using this. I've seen like loads of different people using it, and constantly using it, as in not they're not wearing it constantly, but like regularly in the background, or like, for, you know, on different stories and stuff, you see them using it. So it obviously, they're at that level of looking for that 0.0001% to add on to push them into, you know, the next level, to get, like, Ricky's looking for that tiny last little bit that's going to push him past Roman or past Justin or past Jeff or whoever. But then you also mentioned people like, you know, my sister-in-law that it would be useful for, or my dad that it would be useful for, of people who are just like, oh, I just want to be able to, like, you know, pick up a pencil, or like, I want to be able to just sit down and stand up without gripping the sides of chairs in agony before I even move. Like, I hurt my overload of my patella like 2 weeks ago, and now every time I go to like sit on the bed, sit on a toilet, sit on a chair, I'm like, here we go. Like, just brazen to be like, please don't let this be another one that hurts. Like,
no, that's, I think that's exactly it. Is, you know, again, we've found that the athletes know their bodies well enough to where they sense this faster than anybody. They see the results and they know it within like 3 days. And they're like, this is amazing. You know, actually, the first person we worked with out of CrossFit was Travis Mayer, and he'd had patellar tendonitis. And, you know, one of the things that we see about around a lot of the athletes is, and particularly with CrossFit, I would say CrossFit and then the endurance athletes, is repetitive stress injuries. So patellar tendonitis, Achilles tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, things where your soft tissue is really just getting hammered and needs to recover more effectively. And there's a really powerful, kind of like we're talking about with the knee recovery earlier with the chondroblast and the reduction of inflammation, there's a really powerful signaling mechanism that we can trigger to help get people through that. And I think that's one of the ones where, again, if you're training like I train, you know, you train an hour a day, hour and a half a day, then you're going to notice a little bit. But you know, what we found is that typically athletes, because they're training so much, like the third day in, they're like, this is insane. Why has nobody told me about this before? You know, let's jump in for it. Where, you know, for me, the most the most energy building stories out of this, and we get them in kind of, I would say between 2 to 4 or 5 a day right now, is my wife couldn't walk through the grocery store. You know, she couldn't walk up the stairs. Like, that's exactly why we built this company in the first place, is to make those impacts for people and be able to have a kind of a life-changing event for them. And I you know, it's nice. It usually takes a little bit longer to get to that. That's, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in, because they've had long-standing kind of chronic issues with these type of injuries or traumatic tissue damage or osteoarthritis or whatever it is they have. But it's just been really gratifying and kind of awesome to see the impact you can have when you give people an alternative to pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, speaking of 4 or 5 weeks, there's Beck says, Kenny Move Plus is a game changer for me. Had a nagging shoulder injury that wouldn't improve. Within 4 weeks of using it, I was training pain-free again. And I think the good thing about that is you hear you saying, now that's always going to take longer, you're looking at 4 or 5 weeks, and then separate to that, here's a customer who sends in a review saying, oh, it's the best. Because usually when you read something like that, you're like, all right, bullshit. You know, you're like, that's his secretary or something. But the fact that, like, I know that she listens to this show regularly, and unless she's like an ultra dedicated secretary who thought, someday my boss might be on that show, I need to integrate myself so I can leave a review. But like, I haven't seen, now obviously reviews on websites, reviews on, you know, whatever, you can kind of like comments, you can cultivate things and you can make things look good. But I haven't heard anyone that uses it say anything bad about it, say like, oh, shit, or oh, it's a money racket, it doesn't work, it doesn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. So there obviously are. And even, I guess, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, placebo effect probably plays into a bit as well, where maybe not even placebo, but like knock-on effect, where it's like, oh, I'm using this thing, I've bought this product, I'm even using this thing. To help this work better, I should avoid like inflammatory foods, or I should, you know, like, and then it kind of, everything starts snowballing and you end up with this like perfect healing system for your body because everything's working together.
No, that's exactly it. And we try to get people into the habits where this is something that they can really see. You really need to use it 4 or 5 times a week for it to work most optimally and provide those kind of benefits. But again, people were having to go into clinics for this before, and our assumption was, if we can get the price down and allow them to use it at home and help them use it in a way where you can do other things. And you know, with a you have to be realistic about those other things. One of the things we have noticed is when we coach people in from a, hey, here's how to build habits, oftentimes they'll say, well, you know, I'll do this with my meditation every morning. And it's like, okay, how many times have you meditated in the last 2 weeks? And then like, twice. Do it with your Netflix. Just no. Make sure that it's something that you're going to actually do every day. Look at your historical versus your kind of forward-looking kind of habits, and based on that, make some decisions on where to build it in. But yeah, it's been, again, just super gratifying for us to be able to see that. And just as an aside, we do actually have some folks who through usage protocol issues have not great results for it. So my partner and I have put our Calendly's out there so that if people aren't getting the results they want out of it, call us in. We're not here to sell you the product. We're here to make sure that you're getting the outcome that you signed up for. And so if you're not, one of the things as an example that we've noticed from doing a lot of these calls is people will put it for a knee problem on a straight knee. When you have it on a straight knee, you can't really access the synovial fluid. And so, I would say 90% of the people who have knee issues that aren't seeing results that call in, it's like, first things first, bend your knee. And they go, oh, okay, that have to bend the knee. And then they call back in 3 weeks later and like, yeah, like way, like bending the knee worked perfectly. So it's great. So it's really kind of the whole process is kind of built around how to make sure that we get people the right results. And if we don't, give us the product back, we'll give you your money back. We're here to solve a problem, not to shift a product is the main point.
Yeah, I actually just noticed that on the website that you have like a money back, 30-day money back guarantee, buy now risk free. There's Emily. Yeah, it's cool. Like it's like look how smug Ricky is that he's using it. Look, he's like, look, this thing is really good. And then even the where is it? It's over here, I think. The areas that it covers, like there's just so many. Like it goes any of the, like even I'm just thinking of CrossFit because just that's what I do, but like literally all the target areas, lower back, upper back, neck, shoulders, wrists, knees, ankles. It's like all the things that are like, oh, that's a bit stiff. They're like, you know what I mean? It's amazing like that. And I know, I think I read that initially it was like just for the knee. And then people were like, hey, we are like, what about my wrist? What about my shoulder? What about my whatever? So you redeveloped or, continue to design based off that feedback, I guess, which is always good to hear as well. I saw that you did like investment or did like a round of investment or whatever to get things going. Like that has to be insanely stressful. Like when you have this thing that you think is great and you're like, all right, like let's do a round of investment. And then it's like, okay, we need this to go really well because we need like, we need this to get the company off the ground and get things going and get these products start shipping out. And then you get like $1 million. And it's like, oh fuck, we've got $1 million. It's like, what if we fuck this up?
No, you're exactly right. It is stressful, but I think one of the reasons we went down the equity crowdfunding route is for my partner and I, this is both of our first direct consumer product, and we felt like it's really important for us to. And so we launched with Indiegogo with the product in the first place because we really just wanted to put in. And I think we booked in 100 interviews with people who had these pain points to understand what they were doing for it now and how they thought about it and the language they used around that. And we had such a good time doing the it was reasonably successful. We raised $1.5 million on Indiegogo. That it's really we're going to be making another product launch. And with this one, we didn't need the crowdfunding piece of it because wow. The company's grown and we're seeing the product sales take off. But we really like the idea of engaging with our kind of community around this. And so we have our gut health product that we'll be launching in late April, early May this year on Indiegogo. And we're going to be doing it the same way, is going out and just really talking to people as much as we can about what problems they have and then how we can help to fix those with the product that we're designing and bringing to market.
Is that light as well? Is that lasers and light as well, or is it different?
It is. But there's no red in that one. It's all infrared, and it's really cool. The one of our partners, as we started the business, had irritable bowel syndrome. So irritable bowel syndrome is essentially either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, and it's kind of a gray area between those. But he would go to the hospital and lose 50 pounds. With these episodes like once a year, and it's just like his training would be shot from that, and he just had to work back up, and then by the time you work back up it kind of falls off a cliff again. And so one of the things we wanted to be able to do with this was understand we've spent with our tech team, tens of thousands of hours modeling how light distributes through tissue, because that's the only way that you can really understand how to dose correctly. And because we have that model already existing, we can now apply it to the gut and reduce inflammation, close up leaky gut joints, improve what they call the FB ratio, which is essentially kind of a measure for gut health or dysbiosis, increase dopamine signaling. There's actually been some very powerful research recently on dopamine signaling from the gut, improving Parkinson's outcomes for Parkinson's patients. And so we'll be researching into that as well. But you know, generally your gut's at the middle of a number of different things. You know, you have kind of the more well-known axis there, the gut-brain axis, where you see brain chemicals and molecules from a signaling standpoint impacted by just gut treatment. But what's been more prevalent in the more recent research in this space is things like gut liver, gut kidney, or gut brain liver, where there's communication between your gut and your brain from a vagus standpoint that then triggers additional enzymes out of your liver. And so we're seeing more and more research into this space, and we're seeing a number of different places where we can help people with, you know, on top of just the pain points they have from a irritable bowel syndrome and these type of pathologies, just improve their daily quality of life for how their digestive tract works and impacts these other pieces of their overall physiological health.
Wow. So you've got the Kinney and the Move Plus, so that's like all your joints, all your like muscular and joint pain and whatever, it'll help you with all that stuff. You've got the gut things coming out in April. Yeah,
April, May, that's right. Yes.
Okay. And then this sensor, that's a separate thing, the kind of brain sensor thing. That sounds like it's more for your own research of like making the stuff that you make better, rather than, hey guys, we invented this thing. It's more like it's not going to be something I'm going to buy. It's like it's useful for stuff like, I don't know, the army or whatever, military, but it's more useful for you to say, all right, the Kinney and Move Plus brought this person from a 3 to a 2, or brought this person from a whatever.
So it'll definitely apply for those. The other thing that it's going to be doing is we'll have protocols with that treatment where we can say, we can identify by using the spectroscopy on the brain, which region of your brain might have some kind of metabolic impairment. And then from that, we would say, you probably have a, you know, prefrontal cortex, you have some kind of depression, and there's different pieces in there. So, you know, different parts of the prefrontal cortex for depression or addiction, as an example. If you are addicted, this is something where we can improve that function there and at least give you an improved way out of the hole. So a lot of the things that you see with depression are kind of like, okay, well, you need to go exercise more. Well, that's kind of hard to do when you have depression, when you're in the hole already. Let's improve that metabolic function in this area so that it makes it easier for you to take action to get out of this hole. And also, we can show you this 3D model of, you know, this 3D picture of your brain showing before treatment, during treatment, short-term, middle-term, long-term impacts of, you know, the treatment. And in many cases, it'll be paired with things like training and dietary change, but you can see that functional change in your brain that you're triggering and improving by making these behavioral changes and using the therapy.
Fucking hell. So you're going to cure arthritis, Parkinson's, gut disease or gut problems, depression. So then cancer is the only one left, really. That's the last piece of the puzzle. And then you're just God. You've just fixed everything. That sounds incredible. It'd actually be really cool. You should offer that to CrossFit. Like, it'd be so cool to do that kind of spectrometry test on someone who's never trained or like done CrossFit or something, and then just follow them for a year of like, okay, here's the deal. We'll pay for your gym membership. We'll pay for your anything that you need, like shoes, whatever. But the deal is you have to go like 4 days a week for a year, and you have to do this once a week. You have to let us do this test on you once a week, and you're signing this contract now, and you're going to keep going. and then just map their, like, because then that's the level one. Like, they just put that up on their board and they're like, hey guys, look, this is Brian. Look what it did for him in a year. Imagine what you could get it to do for other people. Like, that's like innate, like genius marketing. I'm a genius.
I love it. And you're exactly right. There's nothing in the world that you could do as a drug or anything that's going to change your body from a physiological standpoint, change your brain as much as exercise will. Like the measurable molecular signaling differences before and after are insane. It's, and again, this is something where we're just now kind of getting into the technology to be able to, you know, it's one thing to be able to take a blood draw and say, here's what we found, because you have a snapshot. But when you can see all of the variables that are coming into this, and it's a signal, and it's up and down according to your sleep, to the alcohol you drank, to the you know, the number of different things you can do from a dietary or training standpoint. The training is one of the biggest levers in, you know, that exists to be able to make meaningful molecular changes to your brain.
Wow, it's crazy. Unfortunately, we're going to have to start over because Brian from Barbell Spin just joined. So I'll just go back to the very start. He also says his knee could use that. Yeah, I think, yeah, everyone has something that it's like, oh man, that actually would just fix so much. Except, unfortunately, it doesn't fix wine habit. Did nothing for Bex with that. So if people want to find out more, they can go, I'll just pull up the website and then people can just have a little look at it. So if people want to find out more, this is where having a producer would be so handy, wouldn't it? I'm not just doing everything myself. They can go to kinian.io. Yeah.
Perfect. Yes. Kinian.io and reach out. You know, we're always happy to hear from people, and we'd love to answer any questions that can help, help people get into this. Cause it's really a powerful technology, and it can offer, an alternative to things that are really not great to use from a pharmaceutical standpoint. And, you know, the use cases that, and we have to post it up here on the site sometime soon, that are available and supported by these 7,000 clinical trials are, it almost just kind of begs the question, like, how could it do all of this? But I think, you know, your point earlier about inflammation being implicated in so much is exactly right on the money.
Yeah. Someone should tell this guy he's not supposed to have a straight leg.
Yes.
So you can do it. You can do it when you're eating an ice cream. You can do it when you're reading a book, when you're standing in a photography studio. you can do it anywhere. It's great. Listen, you're like, fucking hell, you're a crazy interesting guy. Like, obviously just incredibly bright. You made me feel intelligent and stupid at the same time. It was remarkable. Great job doing that. You know, it's just I don't know, I did my level one like 2 weeks ago, and the thing that kind of bounced around most is like when they were talking about inflammation and stuff, and just the like just how much we're like, we as in like everyone, like society, is just fucking themselves by just encouraging their body to be inflamed and like constantly inflamed, like all the time. And that it should be like, I think she said it should be 3 to 6 or something, but most people are like 20 to 1, like the wrong way around. It's higher the wrong way around, and it's like way too high. So anything that can help that. But yeah, geez, I'm really excited to see the stuff that you bring out, that the it's just like, this product is remarkable, but the stuff that you're talking about, like, gut issues are just so debilitating for people, and so like, they're just so, pardon the pun, but they're so shit. And it's so like, it's the type of thing as well that you can't, you know, you're just saying like, oh, I just have a sore stomach, and it's kind of like, all right, okay, you know, whereas it's like, oh, I'm on crutches, like I'm visibly injured, like I'm visibly debilitated, versus like, oh, I might shit myself, you know, like it's kind of, it's just like, to have a way out of that is brilliant for people, or like to have help with that. And then the other stuff that you're talking about, I'm telling you, man, email someone across it and be like, hey, I've got a project, like give us a year, and let us like test on someone, and we'll do all your advertising for 3 years with this one person.
I love it.
3D picture of your brain, just sort everything out. But thank you, good luck with everything, congrats on everything you've achieved, it's remarkable. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on. I really, really enjoy the discussion, and you've been an awesome and hospitable host. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll send you the money afterwards for saying that.